extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Weeby with my partner in soccer, Kaylin Carr. Big show coming up today. Kaylin's going to run us through maybe the match of the weekend. Toronto-Cincinnati. Who would have thought that at the beginning of the season? Certainly not the Reds, or at least those of us commentating on the Revs. We've also got Michael Boxall from Minnesota United to talk this resurgence under Eric Ramsey and Cameron Knowles. Emmanuel Reynoso's place in his heart and the team, and much, much more from Minnesota. And Vanny Sartini joins us ahead of Messi's, or Miami's, or maybe both's trip all the way across the country to Vancouver. Been looking forward to chatting with Vanny for a very, very long time. But Kaylin, welcome back to the show. There's nobody I'd rather have with me to talk about raccoons and Major League Soccer than you, my friend. What's up?
Well, I had a front row seat to it. It was, I think, 4.5 minutes. It felt like an hour in the time that it was happening. But yeah, man, great to be back on Extra Time. And yeah, it sounds like we got a good show lined up. I always like leading into Boxall and then Vanny Sartini. I mean, that's box office.
You're the opening act, though, here. And that's not because you're just leading into them. You're the main event, dude. Tell me about the raccoon moment as someone who was extremely delighted by all of it and very happy that it was you and Callum on the call.
Well, it's funny because I think 3 days before that, we were in Montreal and we had Lionel Messi's first time on Canadian soil. And I was like, okay, this is, you know, all eyes on the world are watching this match. And it was really exciting. Montreal got off to a fantastic start, of course. Then Inter Miami, as they do, came storming back. And you're like, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath and turn things around for Wednesday to Chester for their match against New York City. You know, always Philly, New York vibes, especially in our group chat. It's always strong. But you're obviously not expecting anything as far as an animal to run out into the pitch. So luckily, Callum, I think, took the wheel and handled it. But he started commentating basically as if he was a player running out on the pitch. And at first I just wanted it to stop. I was like, can we get back to the match? And by the end, I was like, I don't want this to end. Let's embrace the chaos, embrace the madness. This is MLS, to go from Lionel Messi, the GOAT, to Raquinho in the span of 3 days. It was the full MLS experience. Then I went back up to Toronto, finished off with that Clásico against Montreal and Toronto, which was just, you know, we'll get to that in a bit, but Toronto was wild, great atmosphere. So it was quite a week. I've had quite a week, and then now heading back up to Toronto, where I've spent a ton of time this season. It's been a great story, but yeah, I'm still kind of processing everything that happened over the past week.
That sounds like a lot. That's a lot. Sometimes there's luck of the draw, and it seems like you and Callum have had all the luck. I'm going to start describing the time with the raccoon as 4.5 minutes in heaven, just, you know, in the clouds, man, like onto the nether where the afterlife awaits us. It's nothing but milk and honey from here on out. Let's start with this match that you're calling this weekend, and it is a really good one. Toronto having a sort of a prove it moment, I would say, against Cincinnati, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS season pass on Apple TV. What do you like about Toronto tactically? Let's just start with that.
Well, I think what John Herdman has done, you're right to talk about the tactics, because I think a lot of the man management, the inspiration, the culture stuff is what John Herdman rightly gets a lot of credit for, because he's had to shift that, I think, as project number one or priority number one. But the tactical setup has been really interesting as well, too. They stretch the field laterally. So they have Bernadeschi just painted on that right hand side, who's just flying up and down the wing all season. His buy-in, number one, has been tremendous, because he's been spending most of his energy throughout the first part of the season tracking back. But now we're starting to see, after, you know, a long spell without getting a goal, he's just erupted in three in the last weekend match against Montreal. But so they have him on the right. Then the big shift for me actually has been Spicer on the left, coming in the number one overall draft pick. He's added some balance to the other side, and I was curious to see what that would look like with Insigne coming back into the team, because Spicer was just breaking out. I think his first start was the match that Insigne did his hamstring in, so he really had that balance between both sides. That's when Owusu also broke out and now, you know, scored five goals since. But then once those two came together, it really fit perfectly, where one creates space, verticality, some distance and behind, and then you have to account for Insigne, who's always going to tuck in on that right foot and has that kind of ability to either come in and find Insigne or a play off of Wusu, but then you have Spicer running behind on the flank. So it really creates a lot of difficult spots for teams to try to account for, because you get stretched wide and then you find Insigne in the pockets. He also brought Petretta a few times from the left back position, almost interior, like the way we've seen Pep's team sometimes build out, where they break pressure with somebody in between and then you can drive forward. So they've done some interesting things so far. It's been really impressive. And no Bernadeschi will be the big question, but I think Larea is getting closer to back to full health. And then you also have Shaquille Marshall-Rutty, who I think we may see this weekend. So a number of good options. I think a balance of some young players from Toronto that have, you know, are going to get their chance to emerge, and we've already seen, but then also the star players playing at their best. I'm bummed that Bernadeschi picked up a needless, you know, late yellow card to miss out on this match, but I'm sure FC Cincinnati won't be complaining about that.
Always keep you wanting more. That's got to be the attitude of a star player, and Bernadeschi is doing his thing with that one. I think he's got like seven goals in his last four games as well, so it truly is an explosion. Sad not to see him in the lineup, but happy to see Insigne. And I've been thinking a lot over the last couple weeks about where this club was last year. Man, like, it was dire. Trying to reflect on the conversations we were having around Bob leaving and then John arriving and being like, well, why is he not coaching this team? And, you know, I wouldn't want to taint myself with that either. Like, let's have a fresh start in 2024. And it certainly is a fresh start with the players. It just seems like I had this idea of like, okay, who is John Herdman going to be from a man management standpoint? All these big stories, these big anecdotes with both sides of Canada, the men's and women's, with all the clubs he had been with, or excuse me, the nations he'd been with before. And then somehow he's matching that and maybe even going a step further. Like, what makes him special as a man manager in your eye?
I think he's got a special ability to connect with the players. He's taken a different approach. I think some managers kind of manage players at arm's length. And he's mentioned pretty clearly that he's texting Insigne all the time. Those guys have a unique relationship. We saw him running over to him when he scored a goal earlier this year. Bernadeschi's buy-in, as we mentioned. So you have to get the DPs first. But then I even think down to the younger players, he's given them a lot of belief. He's given them a lot of trust. We've seen Spicer, Shaquille Marshall-Rutty take a step forward. They've brought in some players with something to prove too. Matty Longstaff, I think because of the cap situation, they've needed to kind of get creative as far as players that maybe have something to prove or coming off injuries, lower cap hits, but are want to get their career back on track. So I think that that's been a good profile for him.
I would throw Kevin Long in there and Davey Flores as well, mm-hmm. going to this defensive stability. I mean, those guys were looking for a spot and they've not only found it but thrived.
But I think the main thing that stands out for me from teams and experience that I've played in is when you give ownership to the team, to the players. And I think that's the big shift, where he's gone to the DPs and said, hey, this is your team, you have to get this done. But not even just that, at this derby match last week against Montreal, before the match he told me that he left the locker room, had all the coaches leave the locker room, and he said, Jonathan Osorio, you know more about this Canadian Classique than anybody here, than I surely do. You do the team talk. Take the reins. And he was injured. He wasn't even playing. I think he was trying to do a pre-match fitness test to see if he could get out there. But when you see the way they came out in that match compared to the way you saw Montreal come out, it's no question to me where that sort of edge, where you just have that extra motivation. And I thought the idea that you hand that over to the players is always a good recipe for success. So he's getting some credit. I think he's passing it along as well. So I think that's always a good recipe for success.
If you want your boys behind you, back them in a fight as well. That's always been the mantra of folks everywhere. Toronto FC, at the end of the year, playoff team or no?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, Herdman set the bar high. He wants to be top four. I'm not quite so sure they're going to be able to reach that peak. I think this weekend will say a lot to prove it. I could see maybe that four spot being kind of the cap of where I see them being able to break into. But the idea that this is even a conversation is pretty impressive compared to where they were at the end of last year. And, you know, I think it was similar to the way that we saw with Canada, with the men's national team, where you were saying, okay, well, maybe this team was a little bit of a pushover at times, and then turned that completely on its head. And I think a lot of it came from that, definitely that spirit, that mentality that he's brought to the group. And so I see this Toronto team as well. Like, Cincinnati is not afraid to a fight. Like, if you think about the way that they, I think Red Bull last year in the playoffs stands out to me as Red Bull pulled up and was like, all right, we're going to make this a scrap. And Cincinnati was like, absolutely, let's do this. And then they have the quality of Lucho and Barrial. And, you know, at the time, you know, Bupenza and you know, so many different players that I think eventually the quality shine through. But there's no doubt about it. Like, if you're going to play against this Toronto team, you have to at least meet that level for them. And then both teams, I think this weekend, have the firepower where they can match each other as far as that top end talent goes.
Got the scrap and got the quality. We know Cincinnati have that. And it feels like to me, Kalen, that this is still the 1.0 version of Cincinnati, which should be scary for the rest of the East. Maybe not Miami, but maybe Miami. I mean, they made 6-7 huge changes, starter level changes in the offseason. Pat Noonan told me that he watched more tape with players and with the team this year than any other year that he has, just trying to get guys up to speed. And yet here they are on points per game, the best team in the league. They've got one of their designated players, Aaron Bupenza, who was supposed to be like this big elevator, on the shelf with the broken jaw suffered off the field. They're integrating a new striker in Kevin Kelsey in and making all these changes and yet not missing a beat. Should people be scared? Is this like the favorite for the Shield, realistically speaking, given Miami's injury issues?
I think the formula is there, and it, you know, it's the same thing we saw last year. I think they had 14-1 goal wins. I think this year they already have 5 or 6 in the same vein, and the defensive solidity is there. For me, it's amazing when you think of what Cincinnati was a few years ago, and now it is the free agent destination. Like, they went out and got Miles Robinson. They went out and got DeAndre Yedlin. It's clear that they value domestic talent. That's a different profile. They've been able to even pilfer some of that where they knew Miami needed to make a move.
Don't leave Corey Barrett out like this, Doug. Come on.
Oh, I forgot about Corey. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I think all those, that profile of player to come over to, that wants to be a part of that there, you can see why. And then you've got Lucho Acosta, who for me is, if I had money to spend on watching an MLS match, he would be the money that I would spend to watch. He's that fun to watch. Wow. Like, yeah, absolutely. I just love his play, like the way he's able to dribble in tight spaces, the unexpected. I think I talked to him once last year in an interview, and I asked him, you know, how do you come up with some of the things that you come up with? And he's like, I don't even know what I'm going to do next. He's just like, he's just kind of freestyling it, which is rare to see at this level. But that sort of ingenuity, the calmness, I think his size is, makes it even harder to defend, because he kind of takes two small touches before you take one stride, and he's 100%. Already changed directions. So it's been really fun to watch him play, and you know, he's stepped up once again. I think he's got to be in the conversation for one of the best players in the league again.
It's the staccato aspect to his feet that I think makes it hard to keep up with, because he can change. It's not necessarily always the steps, like, and you think about steps in one direction, it's the steps in different directions, the change direction, to change the angle for the shot, to change where you think that pass is coming from, to deke a pass. I mean, I think in particular of the ball he floated over to Kelsey, where he's on the end line and he draws the defender into a slide tackle just with a little, like, it's almost just that little fake step down to say, I'm about to chip this. This is me. And he's so quick with it that you're down and then the ball's over you and it's in the back of the goal. Like, we can wax poetic on Lucho, but maybe we should do the same thing about Yuya Kubo, man. Except Kubo's doing these things at, like, basically every position on the field other than center back. This is crazy. You've played a lot of positions. You moved around a little bit on the field. How do you put this in perspective? How hard is this?
Well, I just wanted to play. So I was like, wherever you want to put me, I am very down. I was like, you want me to run off Brian Ching, Will Bruin, whoever you need, out wide, right back in a pinch, whatever you need. So, yeah, it is impressive to see him up top. And, you know, he's just an intelligent player. I think that's the first part of it. is you have to have that intelligence. The second part is the fitness, the willingness to run and do the dirty work. I think a little bit of another guy like Mathieu Chouinard is another example of a guy that's used in maybe five different spots. Quinn Sullivan, a lot of these guys have similar profiles as far as one, that fitness, to the intelligence, the willingness to play a different role, whatever the team needs. And, you know, I think it also helps when you have Lucho Acosta, because that's still the guy to play it off. And when in doubt, I would say give the ball in my days to Brad Davis, Cuauhtemoc Blanco, run, move off them. So that's been the formula, I think, for him. But the idea that he's been able to chip in with goals, track back defensively, play a six, a wing back, whatever they need. And I think it also speaks to Pat Noonan and the fact that he's built a culture around this team that is really more about winning than what position you're in.
It's about defense too, and that's part of winning, obviously, and that's what provides that foundation for Lucho to go do his thing and catch Kalen and Callum, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS season pass on Toronto, Cincinnati. What's another East team that you like? You've been around the Eastern Conference a lot this year.
I've been impressed with New York City. I think New York City have been really good. And there was a point in the beginning of the season where you would maybe be laughed at for saying that. They just had not been in good form. I think there was mounting pressure on Nick Cushing. And then they got back home to New York and everything shifted. I think they had five matches in a row at home. I think they took four of them. So they were on pace with Inter Miami for that stretch for points per game, and have continued that on the road, and then went up to Toronto. Of course, that one caught a lot of attention for all the, you know, the melee back and forth, the suspensions. But I think almost both teams got something out of that, strangely. Just both teams since then have had that extra bit of, I don't know, like sometimes I can kind of galvanize a group to come around a moment like that. I think there were probably some lessons learned, hopefully, on both sides of, you know, how to not put yourself in a bad position. But I give a lot of credit to Nick Cushing. I think they've also done a good job with the depth. This is a time of the season where I've seen some teams starting to tank and you're looking for fresh legs. And they've had some good options. Malachi Jones has looked really good for me. Got a goal on the road in his first start. Played well, I think, in the Derby as well. So I really like his play. Perea filled in for James Sands when he was gone during Raquinho's moment, had the pass that split everything open in that match. They've done a good job. Alonso Martinez was able to score some goals that allowed Bakar to go to the bench. Now he's back in, getting some confidence. Saw him run over to Cushing. So they've pulled the right strings. And then the biggest one for me also is Santi Rodriguez. I think he's taken a step forward. I think he has like 5 goals, 5 assists already. So on track for double-digit goals and assists, which would be almost doubling his best output for a season. But just like the way he moves in transition, I think he's taken on more leadership. He still always plays on that edge of kind of frustration. Is he going to get himself in trouble here? But they've needed someone to kind of shoulder more of that, because they haven't had that same wealth of talent that we've seen maybe in the past when they had Tati or when they had,
Maxi. Do you think it's talent only? Or to me, it's almost more experience sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I look at this team and I'm like, man, there's a super talented team. Is it the same level as like Maxi and, you know, Chanot and Kayens and Ring and all those? Tati? Maybe not. No, but like even more so, it's just like, man, the experience and the time together.
They're all like 19. So like all these players are, even a lot of these guys I mentioned, they're young players. And the more experienced guys are Sands and Parks, of course, Thiago Martins. But, you know, even Matt Fries is like not an experienced goalkeeper, but he's been one of the best in MLS this season.
New York City. Loving what they're seeing right now. 6 out of 7. They go to New England this weekend. A lot of people loving what they're seeing when they're in New England these days. We'll see what happens for them. Let's run through some transfers. Then Michael Boxall is coming up next to talk about a big matchup in Colorado this weekend for the Loons. Just going to, hey, first reactions here. Kalen, Marco Royce, destinations. Talked about it with Sasha. You're a California guy. Should he go to California? Should he be a West Coaster? Is that the only place that star players can go? Can us Midwest folks get some love? Come on, Marco.
Yes.
St. Louis would be wonderful for you. It would be amazing. You're with your buddy Roman. You're going to be a god. Charlotte, they'd love you too. They'd love you.
St. Louis makes a lot of sense, right? And I think partly sometimes to get a deal done, you have to kind of use all of the relationships you have. Even LAFC do that. Look at the way that they're talked about getting, you know, getting Olivier Giroud, and how some of that comes through the French connection and agents. And yes, Los Angeles is always going to be a big part of that, but I think you can do that in other markets as well. So I think St. Louis makes a lot of sense. Charlotte, I think if they can sell him on the project, and being the man, being the face of a franchise, where maybe sometimes if you go to the coast, it's, you're not going to, maybe they want to be under the spotlight. So it depends on what the player is seeking. But I think more and more, I mentioned it with Cincinnati, when players go and actually take a visit and they actually show up and they see the facilities, they see the fan base, they see the opportunity around there, I think that's got to be compelling. So I hope more people go to places like Salt Lake. If you look at what Chicho Arango is doing there, I want a version of that for Houston. I think if you can get people, Hector Herrera going to Houston is another perfect example of somebody who's been playing at the highest level in Europe and coming back to MLS and didn't go to Los Angeles and has built something really good in Houston. So I hope more players like that take a chance. I think Royce would be a good fit for St. Louis. And I think Charlotte is a good shot as well.
We'll see what happens with Marco Royce as well as Emmanuel Reynoso. We're going to talk to Michael Boxall about Reynoso in just a second, but Tom Bogert and many others reporting to Cholos, maybe Liga MX. And I just want to throw it out there. Minnesota United and Club Tijuana in the same quarter of the bracket in Leagues Cup. Mm. If indeed this does go down for Emmanuel Reynoso.
I think Juan Carlos Osorio is rumored to move to Cholos. Oh,
all the connections.
And I played for him in Chicago with Cuauhtemoc Blanco. So I can say he can manage a number 10 with personality. I think this one seems like a challenge, of course, with all of the off the field issues, but I would bet on Juan Carlos Osorio to be able to get the best of Reynoso. That could be a scary proposition. I love the idea of that does happen, of him playing against MLS teams in Leagues Cup. Like that would just be amazing.
That is the most delicious scenario possible for all involved. I am rooting for Emmanuel Reynoso to go to Club Tijuana for basically every single reason under the book that you're imagining or not imagining. Right now, I'll let your mind sort of run wild with that. How about Shaqiri? Bogert reporting that there's nothing cooking right now, but he could go on to Lugano. I'll give you my take. At some point, the Fire have to. This relationship is not fruitful. It just hasn't been a fruitful relationship, and for there's many reasons for that. With the way the club has been organized, with the signings that they've made, with their lack of continuity on the coaching staff, everything under the sun. I mean, if you've made the playoffs like one time in 12 or 13 years, like it goes without saying that you have issues. It just feels to me, Kalen, like this relationship is sort of, it just didn't work. It hasn't worked. And I don't see a scenario where it's just going to blow up and get to the level they needed to get to.
No, I think if they could make this move, it would be really big to do. And, you know, the Chicago Fire situation is a painful one personally for me, because I played for the club and my memories of playing for the club were all about the tradition, the honor, the passion. I mentioned Cuauhtemoc Blanco. So I know what the standard of a number 10 coming in, a designated player, and what hit. I mean, Blanco was, he brought the business every week, every training session. He didn't take pro days. I'm not saying Shaqiri does, but he doesn't bring it on the weekend. And that's what I can see it consistently. And so for me, it's been, when you think of the outlay financially, it's been the most disappointing signing in Fire history for me. And so I think when you're at this point in the season and you look at the situation, how do you make changes? Are you going to change the manager? I don't know how much that's going to change, right? You can't change all of the players. They've had enough. They've had a number of that over time. But I think if you
a ton of that in the offseason.
Exactly. If you move a designated player, a big figure like that, I think that can change and shift things. And if you give the keys more to some younger players, even a Gutierrez would be top of the list for me. The one thing that people told me that he needs to improve on are his finishing and final action, goals and assists, and defensively. But if you're behind Shaqiri, how do you make that argument where you're saying, oh, this guy's just, he's producing too much, or defensively, his work rate is too great? None of those things are what you're getting from him at this point. So that's where I'm saying it's a lot easier to move on and take a new decision.
And maybe, you know, look, maybe around Euros, Shaqiri going back to Switzerland, maybe that's a good move for him too. TBD. Aaron Bupenza, Boger reporting, quote, time in MLS likely to come to a close this summer. So we'll keep an eye on that situation in Cincinnati. Some other news around. Adelson Milanda could be sold at the end of this season out of Charlotte. Great young center back. Also want to congratulate fellow Andrew Privet, on a contract extension out of the Super Draft, baby. Here we go. Good job, Andrew. Also, Ajuman Hive stand up. Just had to throw it in there. Ragone, Emiliano Ragone has been bought out in Austin. Apparently, if he had played another game, it would have triggered a contract option, and that was not good news for Austin in 2025. There are also big reports out that they will sign a winger from Red Star Belgrade, Osman Bukhari. He's a 25-year-old Ghanaian international and has double digits in goals and assists this year. I think like 10 and 10 or so in that area. Some Joe Painsil vibes? I don't know. Look, Austin would certainly hope so. But let's end here before we get to Michael Boxall and Atlanta United. Nothing to report on Thiago Almada right now, but there is reporting that Giorgio Giacomakis could be on his way to Cruz Azul. Quote, a transfer is a realistic outcome per Tom. They bought him for $4 million from Celtic. Reports around $6 million perhaps to Cruz Azul. Is this a good move for Atlanta United?
No, I don't think so. We mentioned, no, this would be fun in Leagues Cup. This is not what you want to see if you're Atlanta United at this point. And it makes me nervous because it seems like if the player is interested, which is where some of the rumblings are, that's where you're starting to question, well, what's going on in Atlanta right now? And how do they keep him happy? Because yes, he hasn't been fit consistently. I think that's probably the biggest knock on Giacomakis. But when he has been playing, you know what you're getting. It's one of the best strikers in the league. So at a good age. And so it fits the profile, I think, of what Garth Lagerwey wants to do as far as signings moving forward. And you've seen a lot of the profile of the guys he's got in so far have done that. But just something looks off with Atlanta. I don't know if you have an answer for it. Maybe you've seen them more than I do. But it just looks just off. I don't know how to describe it, because at moments you see it's all there, but then that kind of consistency and the away form has never been good for them. But now that they're losing matches at home, that's where I start to get even more concerned.
Yeah, the injuries are a big explainer, but I don't think you can put it all there. You're just not getting enough out of, I'm trying to think of one player this year where you're like, okay, well, we've gotten more than expected out of that particular guy. And I'm just not sure that exists for Atlanta right now. And if that's the reality and you have high expectations, well, you're not going to come anywhere close to meeting those. On the flip side, Liga MX seems like a pretty good market for MLS teams these days, going both ways. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to Leagues Cup. We'll chat about that with Michael Boxall as well. Thank you so much, Kalen, for stopping by, man. I hope you see some sort of wildlife this weekend, either on the field or off.
Thanks, man. No, they have the defender, the hawk in Toronto. So I think his job is to keep all intruders, pitch invaders off the pitch. So I'm hoping for another clean weekend from that standpoint.
Keep him away from Aquino. Just keep him away from Aquino. All right. Thank you, Kalen. On to Michael Boxall we go. A big welcome to Michael Boxall of Minnesota United, joining Extra Time here. Massive game this weekend in Colorado, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, free on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Michael, we're catching you on an off day here, man. What are you up to? What's today look like?
I mean, obviously lucky enough to join you guys, and then hopefully, yeah, hitting the links in a couple hours, and then the kids come home from school, and then the circus begins.
A lot of luck in there. I don't know if we're the luckiest part of your day. Hopefully it gets a little better off the tee for you. What does it mean to you to captain Minnesota United, because you've been in MLS for a long time now? Mm-hmm. We've never had the opportunity to chat, but you're wearing the C in the club that you call home.
I mean, I feel like between this year and the previous years, the role hasn't really changed. I feel like whether I'm wearing it or someone else's, I feel like I still have a responsibility to help lead the team. And yeah, obviously in the preseason had a conversation with Cameron Knowles, and he thought it'd be best for me to wear it this season. And I mean, it's probably a coincidence we're having good results while I wear it, but it's you know, we're having a good run so far to this beginning part of the season.
Right, don't take it off, I guess. I was thinking back, and I'm a big Super Draft guy, and you know, I started full-time at the league in 2011, and that was the year that you were drafted in Vancouver. And I'm assuming many people may not remember those days. I'm curious what you learned in Vancouver in 2011 and 2012.
Probably those earlier days, probably a few too many bad habits that meant I wasn't in the league too long during that first stint. Yeah, obviously on an expansion team back then, was a tough season. Probably played a few more games than I expected to play and kind of thrown in the deep end. And but yeah, lucky enough to learn off a few very good professionals, obviously John Thornton and Lee Yongpyo. Joe Cannon was always around helping me out. So I think those three guys kind of, yeah, as I kind of moved out of the club, kind of gave me great advice to that obviously struck a chord somewhere because I'm still playing a few years later.
How'd you get back to MLS? What's the short story there?
My national team coach, Anthony Hudson, had a contact with Adrian Heath, and obviously they were in the need for a center back at that point in time. And yeah, it's kind of all about who you know. And yeah, it kind of worked out for me for sure.
Worked out for all parties involved, to be honest.
I think so.
Before I drive into this season and what's changed under Eric Ramsey and this amazing run that the Loons have been on, I'm curious, who's the best center back partner you've ever had?
I mean, it's in the league, or because I mean, Winston Reed's got to be up there. Obviously, you got to give Ike Opara a shout out.
Okay, let's focus on those. What was so good about your days with Ike in Minnesota?
I mean, obviously, coming from 2017, 2018, we league goals for fun. And then him just coming in, it wasn't just him. I think when he came in, it was with Vito, with Ozzy, with Romain, who just made us a lot more solid and reliable back there. But obviously he knows how to win games. He was a freak athletically. He was the toughest man to beat, won everything in the air. So I think just seeing that firsthand was, yeah, I learned a lot off him for sure. And just a great guy off the field as well. Just an awesome dude.
How about Winston?
Just a quiet but very imposing leader. I think, yeah, obviously that his second year at West Ham when he went down to the championship, and every time he comes, he learned a lot there. And then every time we would report for the national team, you just see his kind of aura kind of grow. Like, didn't say a lot, but just a massive presence. And yeah, obviously the way they defend in England, just it's so hard-nosed. He's ruthless with everything. But yeah, and also just the nicest guy off the field as well.
Seems like there's a theme there, like a little bit of a killer on the field, nice guy off the field.
Yeah.
This year, it seems like Minnesota, you guys are killers. What's different about this team? And to be completely fair, I know you mentioned Cameron Knowles. Mm-hmm. You were undefeated with Cameron as the interim head coach too, two road wins and a draw. So it seems like this started before Eric Ramsey ever arrived.
Yeah, I think the kind of directive from Khaled was we wanted to play more on the front foot and kind of press teams a bit higher, and Cam Knowles kind of took that to the extreme. And I think those first three, four games, we just went kind of balls out and really went after teams off the press. And I think that kind of mentality kind of stuck and rung through as Eric's kind of week by week introduced what he's wanted to do. And but yeah, Cam, he did a great job through that preseason, through all that uncertainty and all the unknown that was going on through those months.
What's the team look like now? What's the identity of Minnesota United in your opinion?
I think it still has that defensive toughness, and I think we're still figuring things out. We're winning games, but we still know we've got a lot to work on, particularly with the ball. I don't think we've been as sharp as we could have, but obviously we've only been with Eric with probably the same length as the preseason about now. So yeah, we're still working on a few things and still finding ways to win games. So I think defensively we're trying to be tough to beat and gives ourselves a chance to win games through set pieces and hopefully transitions off turnovers high up the pitch.
Well, what's Eric like to work with? I mean, he was a guy with a profile, but I think coming in it was like, okay, well, what's he going to be like as a head coach? What is it anecdotally for you inside the walls?
He's the nicest guy and just super detailed with everything he wants to do. Because I even think, like, reflecting back on like last season, obviously we points wise we weren't near where we should have been, I thought, but there were so many games where we won two or three games at home, which is pretty abysmal. But those, yeah, like a little bit of luck goes our way, then we're 6-9 points better off. So he's just, yeah, focusing on the little details, and obviously we're a bit younger this year. So given all those guys in the field, just a bit more direction to have a foundation to play off. And then when you've got guys like Robin Lord who sees the game and understands the game so well and can pick apart a team, he's class.
This might be a stupid question, but I think human nature over the course of time here tells me maybe not. Eric is 3 years younger than you. Is that strange at all?
No, because, I mean, nah, not really. I think I feel like I'm still like mid, late 20s. And then, I don't know, I can identify
with that.
And I can't handle tequila like I did when I was in my 20s, though. But no, he's the way he's kind of come in and his aura, I see him as a lot older than he is. So I don't know, that dynamic hasn't really been a thing. And I think age doesn't really matter. I think if he's good enough, then you respect that no matter what.
Same thing for players, obviously. I mean, yeah, everybody for sure. Talking about Teemu Pukki, and then mm-hmm. I thought Taniyan O'Shea do well in USL Championship. I didn't know mm-hmm. if it would translate like this. You see him every day in training. What makes this mm-hmm. guy so difficult to defend?
It's actually quite funny because I find Teemu more of a handful at training, and then I think we've all been kind of surprised by Tani's what he's done with, especially the first half part of the season where he was coming off the bench for 10, 15, 30 minutes and really having an impact. I mean, he's physical, he's direct, he's quick, and he's so eager to learn and eager to impress every time he steps on the field. And I think he's done that in the short amount of time. And yeah, the future's very bright for that kid for sure.
What makes Teemu so hard for you to deal with?
I mean, in our trainings, he's got like a short backlift off like both feet. And if you give him too much space to like block the angles, then he finds a way. And I think especially when he's playing with Robin and they link so well together, and just understand each other so well, they're a tough combo to defend.
I did a little research before we got on here, Michael, and I just, mm-hmm. you've been there since the start with Minnesota United. And I wanted to know which players have scored the most goals against Minnesota United in the regular season. I'm curious if you can tell me with any sort of reliability which ones they are. So 5 goals or more in the regular season, there are 7 players. Can you name those 7 players?
5 goals or more. I'm probably going to go Carlos Vela.
Vela's got 4, so almost Damn. There.
Okay. The 2 Kansas City wingers.
Yeah, Johnny Russell is one of them. Diego yeah. Rubio, probably some coming in for Kansas City in there as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hat trick in the snow would be one. I think he had a hattie that day. Joseph Martinez.
Okay, no, I wasn't there that day. That was yeah. before my time, but I'm not I don't know.
Kai Kamara, Giassi Zardes, Diego Valeri, Diego Rubio, Diego Fagundes, Johnny Russell, and Joseph Martinez.
Okay.
What's the center forward in the league that's given you the most difficulty over the years?
I don't know. I feel comfortable against most that are typical number nines, but I think the ones that make it difficult are the ones that kind of drift off and you kind of lose sight of them. But I like being close in contact to most nines. So anyone that plays that traditional role, I love those kind of battles. But obviously he was class. I think I've only played him once or twice, but his movement's special. He finishes from anywhere. And then I think Polito, when he drops in, that front three is tough to guard when he's on the field, and they've got obviously 2 very dangerous wingers who are direct. And obviously we have, we've had our struggles in the past against Peter Vermees' teams. And I think those 3 are a big part of that reason why.
The nicest rivalry in MLS. Who's the nicest player on Minnesota United? Who's the best player right now on the Loons? And you can define that however you want.
Robin Lord, for sure. Like, without a doubt. I think he's the amount of positions he can be the best player on the field, and whether he's a 6, an 8. I mean, he played 9 for us for a long time, and he's just took the honor as the club's leading scorer. But he does it all, whether it's Yeah, I don't think he loves the defending part, but he'll roll his sleeves up and do the gritty work. And I mean, the passes he sees and stuff, his vision is probably, he's top five in the league, I'd say.
I didn't want to sort of taint your answer there by saying Robin Lode's name, but I had a feeling you were going to go that direction.
Yeah.
Let me make it bigger now for Minnesota United. Who's the best player in Minnesota United history, in your opinion?
History. Wow, that's a tough one, because it's obviously such a short amount of time. We've had kind of players come in for 2-3 years and been magical. Obviously, Darwin Quintero was on an absolute tear for 1-2 years. He was special. But if you take it just at like a micro level, the best player is probably going to be Reynoso. I think on his day, when he's fit, when he's healthy, when he wants to be, he's, I think, the best that's ever played at Allianz in a small sample size, I think. Yeah.
What's something that Ray can do that nobody else can do? Like, what's the magical part that he brings to the game?
He just does everything, whether it's set pieces, I've seen teams double team him, and they know what he's going to do. Then he knows that they know what he's going to do, and he still does it and manages to get past them and set people up. Some of the goals he scored, I think during that Leeds Cup run, was special. He was just so talented for us, and a part of some pretty special moments.
We're talking in the past tense here, and there are some rumors about Xolos with Ray right now, and we'll talk about that in a different part of the show. Mm-hmm. I'm more curious, I guess, thinking and hearing you talk about Ray, like, what emotions did you have in these moments we've experienced where it's like, where is this guy at? And we're experiencing that from the outside. You guys are trying to win soccer games knowing he's an incredible piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
What emotions did you personally go through sort of in the back and forth will he, won't he moments?
It all started beginning of 2023 when he was 4 or 5 months late, whatever it was. And obviously there's some concern. Back then you kind of wanted to make sure that him and his family, everything's all good, because we didn't understand the situation at all. And then he shows up, and honestly, when he's in the building, when he's on the training pitch with you, he's like in person the nicest guy, works hard, obviously super talented. But I don't know, something happens when he touches down on Cordoba. It's yeah.
Can you give me a little perspective on Minnesota United, the club? Like, and I'm going to ask you in a second whether or not you think these are true championship contenders right now. But like, where has this club been, and where do you feel like the club is now in the present and looking toward the future with new leadership?
I think Adrian did an excellent job for those first years, bringing it up from the NSL into the new stadium. And obviously his eye for talent and how he recruits, I think, speaks volumes, especially in that 2019, all the guys that they brought together in that year to bring a really competitive squad. And I think we underachieved that year as well. And then, I don't know, got a bit unlucky through injuries and a few guys just not performing up to their potential. And then obviously since Eric's come in, I think we're setting a good base. Whether we're championship contenders this year, it's probably too early to tell. I wouldn't say so. But, we're setting a good base for the future. And I think, obviously, on the recruiting side, we're getting a bit younger. So I think we're setting ourselves up for the next year, 2 years. But, I mean, we'll do everything we can to go as far as possible this year.
The Timberwolves are on this run right now in the Twin Cities, and I'm sure it's taken everything over. And I saw the press conference with Kat and Ant, and they were saying, hey, forget about the losses in the years before. Mm-hmm. Like, we're trying to win now. We're winners right now.
Yeah.
You've been there a long time. Can you identify with that idea of like, hey, it's the here and now, and we want to be winners in this moment?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of been the mindset my whole 7-8 years here. No professional athlete comes into a training on any day is like, okay, this training I'm preparing for 2026. Like, no, you're preparing to be better today, better tomorrow, and keep stacking up those little percentages. And then, obviously preparing to win on the weekend, which is kind of the mindset Eric's kind of got going with us. Obviously we've done okay in the past 11 games, however many we've played. But none of that, all that means nothing if we don't continue with the same mentality.
How would you define championship contender? I mean, you sort of said, hey, too early. But like, what does that team have in this league?
I think for me, it's teams that are always tough to beat, and they always have one or two difference makers. I mean, you look top of the Western Conference right now, Salt Lake putting their hands up. I think you've got a really well-rounded team that works their asses off, and then you've got Arango, who's popping up for goals for fun. He does so much for them, and when they're staying in games for as long as they can, it always gives them a chance.
I have to ask this because we think of contender and we've got to add Leagues Cup to that mix, and you guys were in the quarterfinals last year, had a nice run. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the tournament overall, just as a player participating, as someone who experienced the addition of that tournament to sort of the slate?
I mean, I was a pretty big skeptic in the introduction of the tournament, but kind of as it got going and you saw how much the fans embraced it, and obviously I felt like the Mexican teams brought a lot to that competition. And as tough as it is for them to play all the games on the road, I thought they were huge in that. And yeah, I think it's something this year I'm actually looking forward to. Obviously we had a good run last year. I think someone sent off early on in that quarterfinal, which kind of led to our downfall. But that was a good fun tournament, and something I'm looking forward to a lot more this year.
Last one before I let you go. I know you got big plans on this on this Thursday, man. Mm-hmm. Colorado Rapids, what do you see? A resurgent season from them, and you'll head to Colorado for a big game that's free on Apple TV this weekend.
Yeah, obviously they had a very busy winter, brought in a lot of players, and I think they had a lot of good professionals in that team. Obviously new coach, and I think you look at the underlying stats with them, and they're a team that really goes after teams, and they have talent. So if you think they're the Colorado of previous years, you're in for a long day. And I think they've shown that to a lot of teams, whether it's at home where it's always tough to play in Colorado, or they've gone on the road and got some good results as well. So we're going to have to be at our best to get something out of that.
Michael, Minnesota's a new team this year too as well. You got a new identity. It's not the team of old. Michael Boxall wearing the C, hanging, holding things down. We'll enjoy the game this weekend, man. Thanks for joining. Man.
Appreciate you having me.
Big thanks to Michael Boxall for joining us on his day off. Some valuable time and some valuable insights on Minnesota United's run so far under Eric Ramsey, Cameron Knowles, and all these players that are getting the job done as a collective. You can watch their match against the Rapids for free on Apple TV this weekend on MLS Season Pass. And I expect many people are going to be watching to see if Lionel Messi travels and or starts/plays in Vancouver. A massive, massive match for the Whitecaps, who are trying to get over the hump from a team that is good, but maybe doesn't win the biggest games, to a team that can challenge for the biggest trophies in Major League Soccer. And their manager, Vanni Sartini, is one of the good ones, both as a coach, but also as an entertainer and as a soccer mind. It's my pleasure to chat with him. I hope you enjoy. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome Vanni Sartini to the show, manager of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Vanni, welcome to Extra Time.
Thank you, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. And because I'm nosy, Vanni, I saw you and Giorgio Chiellini chatting ahead of the LAFC game, having some yucks on the field. I have to ask you, what were you talking about?
We were actually in that clip. If you know Italian, you can pick it up a little bit.
I do not.
We were actually about discussing the difference between roster construction and transfer market between Europe and MLS, to be honest.
Oh, interesting. So Giorgio is a very curious guy, huh? Do you think we can keep him around North America for a while?
I think that he told me that he loved here. He told me that he actually really liked the experience here in MLS. He was more of a kind of family thing to go back now, but I think he sees himself in the future getting back here too.
What do you, when you work with players, or I mean, I guess anyone really, coaches at any level, What can you pick out that you say, okay, this guy would be a good coach?
A lot of things. First of all, the passion of the game. We have some guys that are really passionate about it, the tactical part and the collective part of the thing. The second thing is that, in my opinion, there's a when you see a player that has also a lot of interest outside the game, you can say that he can be probably a good executive in the game in the future. I had this this example with me with Tos Ricketts, for example. I coached him for a year and a half, and he was doing his master, doing all the things, and you can see on how he's involved now with the club. Now he works with the club that he's going to be a great executive in the future, for sure.
What is the difference between coaching culture in North America and in, let's say, Italy, thinking back on your experiences?
Yeah, I think it's, of course, there's a lot of difference in the way, there's a couple of big differences, in my opinion. The first big difference is that the way that we use the staff, the extended staff, the people around the coach, that I think is much more kind of professional and organized and structured here than it's in Europe. In Europe, the coach is like the director of a European movie, you know, is the master, is the leader maximo. While here, there's more, I would say, a structure on divisional roles and anything. That I would say the most important thing. The second, the on the relationship with the players, I don't see too much of a difference, because I think that's a lot that is kind of individual. The thing that I could say probably is that, because how MLS worked, you know, with the not too much roster spot, with the salary cap, with the fact that the transfer sometimes are not that fluid like in Europe, I think a coach here needs to be more teacher than manager than in Europe. And it's actually something that I really like, to be honest.
What do you find yourself teaching the most?
You know, the tactical part, for sure. Like, you know, to tell the players how to improve in their movement on the field and everything. With some of them, I would say it's really nice to find, I call it nuggets of teaching, like even a simple thing, the positioning, the body positioning when you're defending, or the timing of a run or something. And my experience tells me also that higher is the level of the player, the more the player wants to be coached. So it's also another thing that you have to realize, even with experience, when you find that someone is coming and, you know, and sometimes you can be a little bit, you know, okay, what I tell this guy, he's already played a lot of games, blah, blah, blah. Eh? No, you need to be on top of him because he good player love to be coached.
I apologize to our audience. We're going to talk about Messi in Miami here in a second. I'm nerding out with Vanni Sartini before we can even get there. And I have one more question, because I've been talking to Pablo Mastroianni a lot about Inelli and his level of ability to absorb and apply lessons and knowledge and improve session after session. Who's the best learner that you've coached with the Whitecaps?
There's a couple, for sure. Brian White, for sure, in terms of understanding the positioning, attacking the space, timing, those kind of things. I would say Pedro Vita too. I think Pedro is the guy that changed the most since he came here. He was like kind of a typical South American number 10, like, you know, I just play and let's see what happened when the other team has the ball. And he understood immediately that it wasn't the case in MLS. He had to do much more intense and playing more in a team style. And he gave me a lot of, I would say, satisfaction to see him grow as a midfielder in this couple of years that we worked together.
I've been coaching 5 and 6 year olds, and even on that small level, I can tell you the joy you get from watching someone apply the things that they're working on is amazing. Now, there is another side of the game, and I think you maybe felt that at times midweek in the Canadian Championship. Have you located a neuralizer to clear the memory of both yourself, your staff, and your players, Vanny? You said afterwards, we need that device from Men in Black to forget this.
Yeah. Well, it's true. We need it because, again, it was probably, I think, honestly, the worst performance in the almost 3 years that I've been here with the club. And not because we lost against the second division team that again, the CPL is not actually the Canadian League, but anyway, a team that spent much less than us. But because it can happen, you know, you attack, they score, and on goal. But I didn't like the attitude. It looks like for the first time in, I don't know, 120 games that I coached the team, it was like almost a casual attitude, not willing to make the extra round, not willing to make the tactical things that we were trying to do. So, you know, we needed a complete reset. There's a million of excuses that you can pick, like, okay, it was the sixth game in 20 days after a lot of travel. They were very tired. We are waiting for probably the biggest game in the history of the club with 55,000 people on Saturday. So maybe the mind was already there. But, you know, I always try to be self-reflective on this. And, you know, if you didn't pass the message that this game was important, and luckily, even with the loss, because we did well in the first leg, we qualified. The game was important and the competition was important. You know, it's on me. So, we need a device, the neuralizer for the player and, you know, a big, deep self-reflection session for the coach.
certain ages will remember the neuralizer better than others. For the youngsters, go watch Men in Black. How do you game plan for Miami with or without Messi? I mean, we hope that he comes and flies all the way to Vancouver, but how do you do it?
Yeah, first of all, we hope that he comes. We hope to have everyone here. So, you know, we, before being a coach of the Whitecaps, we are soccer fans and resident of Vancouver. So we'd love to have him in our city. I think, gotta be honest, between me and you, the most important player in the team is not Messi, is not Suarez, is Busquets. And I think that is the key to win those games. The key to win those games is to limit the build-up through Busquets at the when they start to play. So try to be extremely aggressive with the front three. Try to limit their possibility to play, because if you let them play and build up, then you know, the damage is already made, because if the ball arrives to Suarez and Messi in the final third, you can have as many men that you want. You see the fantastic goal that they scored, like with combination with four or five guys around them. So I think the only way to limit those kind of player is to limit the number of service to those players. So that's the reason why I think that Busquets is the most important player, the guy, quote unquote, to limit in that team.
Is Miami the most talented MLS team that you've seen?
Yes, I would say so, because, you know, Messi, Suarez, and probably there was the Toronto Dream Team, you know, when they had the Bradley, Altidor, Jovinko, Victor Vasquez, and they were, you know, very good player, but, you know, I think that Messi, Suarez, Busquets, and Alba together, they won more Champions League and World Cup and Euro Cup that games that me and you at Football Manager.
I got no wins in Football Managers. They're lapping me about 500 times there.
So yeah, that is the best team that we have had in MLS, and I hope that it won't last for long, because I think the league is growing in attracting player in a way that is probably, and again, I think this is the seminal point, like when Beckham arrived, and then a certain kind of development. The same thing when Messi arrived, we will have, and like we are talking about now, you know, I'm reading like Marco Reus, Modric, whatever, all interest to come here. I think it plays a major part, the fact that the biggest player of our generation decided to play here.
What would a win against Miami mean to the Vancouver Whitecaps? We've been talking for a while now about getting over a hump, sometimes in big games, and at LAFC was a big game, and that was a 3-0 win for LAFC. Like, how much would this mean if you guys go out and perform, and not just perform, but get the result that you want?
I think it would mean a lot because, as you said, we always done, like in the 2.5 years, 3 years now that I'm been the coach, we've done well. We won the Canadian Championship, we won the playoff, but we are becoming the team that is good but not good enough, you know? And we want to kind of get away from this status. And the only way to do it is winning big games. And winning a big game would give us the confidence to, first of all, finish this very hard period before the break. We have two games against Kansas City and Colorado that we need to make points. And maybe arriving at the break in the top four, that would be a major thing for us because we never, I think the club maybe once been in the top four, twice. Yeah, being in the top four. So that would be a great thing. And also it would give a lot of boost to players for the future and to everyone else, you guys are always excited for the transfer market. So, of course, if I'm a player from Europe or South America and I see the standings and I see the Vancouver Whitecaps second or third, maybe I'm willing more to come than if they're fifth or sixth.
Oh, I'm going to ask you about the transfer market. You are right that we like that, Vanny. There's a quote that I found from you that I found really interesting. It's as follows. There's a lot of ways to make your team play well, but there's only one way that you really believe in is the right one.
Yeah.
How well is your team playing and how close are they to the way that you believe the game should be played?
I would say quite good, quite well. We're not perfect. We'll never be perfect because perfection is utopia. We improved a lot, I would say, this season defensively. I say that defensively, we're very close on the way that I want to play, completely zonal, being aggressive, but not hyper-aggressive and intelligent in the way to try to win the ball in the middle third and to attack the more we can. I think we can be even better when we have the ball. We had moment of brilliance and the way that I want to see, like, the games against Portland, the game against Toronto. But I think we need more movement when without the ball, when we have the ball. That's the basic of the way that I love to play soccer offensively, to free the space and to play in a very selfless way, even when we're attacking. And we're close, but we can improve there.
How would you grade yourself so far this year?
I would say B minus, yeah, B minus. Like I think did well in the sense of recognizing at the beginning of the year that we need to change something in the offensive structure to be better, and to get over some kind of thoughts that I always had. Like, for example, never played with wingers, and we'll play with wingers now when we have the ball. And I think that. I still need to figure out a way to be better in two things, in my opinion. First of all, what you said before, we always lost these important games, the playoff. Not always, because the Canadian Championship finals were very important, we won, but the playoff, the big game, the game that make us become... So probably we need to improve in the preparation of the game, even kind of psychologically. And the second team I want to be... I'm still trying to be better everything. But I think that improving the game with the subs... it's something that an area that I believe in a lot, and I think I can do more.
I also have heard you talk a lot about set pieces.
Yeah,
and I'm curious your attitude on that side of the game too. Just because I think one of the things I heard you say earlier this year was, you know, we spend however many percentage points set pieces are within the game, and I think it's around 30% generally. We spend that much time on the training field on set pieces. I'm just curious your perspective on how a team becomes good and what makes a team good on set pieces.
So we actually became much better than last year for the moment, knocking wood, defensively. Defensively last year was a problem. And again, that is, I think that's two things. A lot of study behind it, a lot of practice, and also I would say delegating too. That's the third thing. Because the fact that you know, you cannot be on top of everything, and you have to give aerial leadership. And we have my assistant Michael D'Agostino that took the leadership on doing the set plays. Of course, we plan everything together, but when it's 25% of time that we dedicate on set plays on the field, he is the head coach. I'm the assistant coach, and so that's the important thing to do. And to, again, even giving to the staff aerial leadership like this, but in a way that you're always present. It's not that I think it allows to more creative solution, more like you know. Again, we are we've done something little different, not changing everything, but that allowed us to be on top of things, and also it allows those coaches also to be even more excited when they have to speak with the players and everything, because it's more of their team, and the players can react in a better way. So
who's the guy on the field? I'm just thinking in terms of, okay, you can train, you can be on the pitch, and you guys are there hands on molding the clay, but when the game starts, you need leadership on the field. Who is the guy on this team that, regardless of performance, like, you know, look, there's guys that score goals, guys that have the big moments, but personality-wise, who is the leader of this team?
I would say we have Ryan Gold, that is the guy that, even giving him the captaincy this year, he stepped up and being a leader and talking to the team and everything. Then we have areas of leadership, like in actually some area of the game, like you were talking about set plays. When Ranko Veselinovic is on the field, he is the leader on the set plays. He know, we told him that, for example, he decides which play we need to call. He decides with the lineup we need to have on offensive set plays, because he's the leader there. And also we have another silent leader, that is Andres Kupas, that is not a talker and everything, but, you know, you could feel his presence when he's on the field and when he's not.
Is there anything missing from this team as you look at the summer transfer window? Maybe missing is the wrong word. Is there anything that could be added to your team that would take the Vancouver Whitecaps to another level?
Yeah, probably. You know, we have some ideas about it, in the sense that, you know, we had Damir out for a few weeks, and we were a little bit in trouble because we didn't have any replacement for our strikers, and he's back to back to back. They had to play every time. So probably adding him one piece up top would be important. And then we looked for a lot, but he needs to be the right player for another wide player, kind of wing back, those kind of type of player, because in our system the wing back is a very demanding position, and having more quality option would be helpful. So I would say those two things are actually the thing that, if the right player will come up and there's the possibility, we will go for it. And then on the other side, it's need to be ready on everything, because we know that we are the Vancouver Whitecaps. We are a team that is designed to try to perform, but also to develop players and to have the luck to sell players in Europe or whatever. Like, so, you know, if something sometimes in the future will happen that, you know, one of our rising guys like Ali Ahmed or Pedro Vite, one of these young guys, they're going to have a big chance to go to a bigger club abroad. We have to be ready to find a new guy there.
I'm looking at your roster profile right now, and thanks be to MLS PR for giving all of us out there ability just to look at a PDF and know what DP spots and U22 spots are open, etc. That's not the full context, but there is an open DP spot, and there is an open U22 spot, and Diver Caicedo, if he left, there could be two. Do you envision summer moves that involve a DP spot or U22 spots?
I think it's not a question for me, it's more a question for front office, but knowing what they are doing, knowing the philosophy, it's more the U22 spot than the DP, I think.
Okay.
That's what I think, because that's the idea of bringing players that we can develop, we can work. And also, gotta be honest with you, I of course I would love to try, but I don't know how would I be good coaching Messi, Suarez, Busquets, Alba. I think I'm a very good coach in when we have to develop something. I don't know, because I've never done it before, but I don't know how would I be if I would have like those big names.
That's interesting. I'd love to see it as well. Before I let you go, Vanny, I mean, you've coached a lot of the coaches in this league. You're very familiar with what's going on. You have a tactical mind and you love to share. I'm curious what team you enjoy watching the most right now in Major League Soccer, just from a soccer perspective.
I like Cincinnati a lot. I like Cincinnati, how they play. I like Columbus, how they attack a lot. There's a lot of ideas offensive-wise that I like both of what Path and Wilfred are doing. Defensively, I'm interested to see a lot of things, but I really have a complete different mind than a lot of our coaches. So I like to see the Vancouver Whitecaps when they don't have the ball.
What is different about your mind and what is about the Vancouver Whitecaps that are different than the way other people see?
I always pride myself that we are the most zonal team in the world. That's no one defends only the space and the ball like we do. That's what I strongly believe. And most of the team in this league, they play a much more man in the zone system. That of course they have a structure, but then they follow the man when they're in the zone, even or getting even out of place. That of course it's a trademark in the sense that a lot of teams they look more aggressive than us, but I prefer to be organize and try to again be in control of. That's the way that for me is being in control. Even when you defending the space and not the man. So
you're saying choosing the as opposed to showing that aggressive all the time, choosing the right moments to show.
Choosing the right moment, they're always moving in function of the ball and the position of the ball and the position of your team. It's never in position, never because of the opposition.
Can I ask you one question before I let you go? Just because I want to nerd out on this.
Yeah.
LAFC, it seemed like Dini Bawanga really found a way to find the open space behind your wing back and on the right side of that right center back. Is that an issue of like, oh man, we didn't quite figure that out? How does that relate to your defensive principles?
Yeah, I think that the problem with Bawanga when we played against them was twice the transition, that we didn't do the transition in the right way. The one time that he figured that it happened, what you say, was the goal that he scored in LA in the playoff, in the first half. And it was a mistake because in that case we went through the man instead of marking the space. I think that the more that's the thing. The thing is that I can bring you examples on when teams they always try to exploit our side because again since we're defending the space the wide side for the wingers are always free, and we did it like. Million time against very good players, against Bernardeschi, against Insigne, against, I don't know, a lot of great wingers in the league, Morris, against, that they didn't create any problem. Bawanga has been a little bit our kryptonite, to be honest.
Everybody's kryptonite, to be fair.
But it's a good thing to understand what to do and to be better in okay, not changing your principle, but maybe challenging yourself. And then if you have to do, because I'm telling you, another player that is our kryptonite that, of course, has less impact of Bawanga, but Jonathan Lewis is another guy that create problem to me every single time, because our wingers that are good running at you with the ball. And we need to be better in defending the space, keeping our principle in order to double them in a better way.
Watch out. I'm going to go watch that goal back from last year's playoffs and do a little study of myself, Vanny. Every time I talk to you, I learn something. Every time I find myself going to watch soccer to try to see something new, I appreciate your time. Good luck this weekend, man.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Vanny Sartini. Always a pleasure. I hope everyone out there enjoyed that chat as much as I did doing it. Have a great weekend, everyone. MLSsoccer.com is your home for all the scores, the highlights, and the schedule, all the games on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. We'll see you on Monday. Oh, excuse me, Memorial Day. We'll see you on Tuesday, everybody, for the breakdown with Matt Doyle. Have a great weekend. Adios.